Does modern life make you restless for more? I hope so, because you've joined us here on Restless. I'm Father Joseph Gill, along with Lauren and Diane, as we seek to restlessly seek the face of Christ in our crazy and mixed up modern world. I was trying to read from our description because apparently we're no longer zany young adults.
Good,
but
go on.
And that was it. That was our
that's
description.
It?
That was yeah.
All right.
That was it. But anyway, you've joined us as we.
It could be better.
Sorry, we'll try to work
we'll
on
work
improving
on
that. We'll throw Joe under the bus because he wrote them. That's all right. But yeah, anyway, we're talking today about overcoming mediocrity. Speaking of a mediocre job of writing the description. No, I'm just kidding, Joe. Just kidding. But yeah, so overcoming mediocrity in one's spiritual life, because that's a big issue. It becomes very easy to kind of get stuck in a rut and just keep kind of doing the same prayers and struggling with the same sins and not really making a lot of spiritual progress. So I think we first got to define what spiritual progress is. Does that mean like more time in prayer? Does that mean like less struggling with stuff? Because I mean, there are some sins that I think I'm going to be confessing when I'm 75, if I live that long, you know?
Hopefully.
Or maybe, hopefully I'm still not. Struggling with them.
No, like live that long.
I hope so.
But
well,
if you don't, you'll maybe be in heaven sooner.
That's my prayer. Yeah, exactly. Lord, keep me as long as I need to be purified.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be here to 300 years old.
Better here than in purgatory, so.
That's what I hear. Although in purgatory, you have the confidence of like, you're on the way to heaven.
It's true.
Here I'm like, man, I still could lose it. Darn it.
Perseverance to the end, Father.
That's what I pray for. I pray for that grace every day. Persevere. So have you like ever felt lethargic in your spiritual life? Like it's just hard to get enthused about seeking the Lord?
I feel joyful, ecstatic, like having mystical experiences all the time.
That's awesome. I need to spend more time with you so it can rub off.
I'm kidding. Of course. I think that's very normal.
Yeah, me too.
I think for me, that was probably before I really developed my spiritual life.
Mm.
But since I've done that, I don't know. It's like I'm always striving to improve and get closer to God and increase my prayer time, but I don't think I've become mediocre.
Oh, that's good. That's good. So you keep trying to make progress every day.
Yes. And I think we'll get into this, but mediocre, you know, state of, you know, a spiritual life is really bad.
It is really bad.
Yeah. And I think it means the person is prideful.
Mm.
Because they think what they're doing is enough.
Yeah.
In most senses. They don't have a sense yet of, or they've lost it, desiring more or improving. And that it can be very hard to get out of that state.
Well, for me, the lethargy isn't the lack of desire. It's I desire it, but I also realize what it's going to cost to get there. And I'm kind of like, ooh, that's a big cost, you know, or I don't know how to get there. Like, for example, you know, if I struggle with a certain sin, you know, maybe it's judgmental thoughts. I mean, I've been reading a really awesome book lately by Thomas Dubé. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He wrote
Yes.
Fire Within, a very mm-hmm. famous spiritual book, but he wrote a new one called Deep Conversion and Deep Prayer. And it's really about this. It's about this idea of mediocrity. And he's talking about, you know, what does it take to have deep conversion? And through that, it's kind of a good examination of my own conscience to realize like, wow, I really don't love people as deeply as I need to. Like I recognize one of my big flaws is that if I'm talking on the phone to somebody, I will be like surfing Facebook while I'm talking on the phone. Mm-hmm. And I realize that is not love. Like I am not fully present to that person. But I'm like, I don't know if I want to give that up. Like, some people are really boring, you know? And you're sitting on a Zoom meeting and you're like, I just want to pay Facebook.
But it sounds like you're spiritually aware of where you are, right? So that is growth in and of itself. Because I guess when I answered this question too, it's more, I was approaching it from the discernment of spirits type of angle where, you know, I'm not always feeling consolation. Sometimes I'm feeling those desolations, which makes it harder to pray. You know, like I don't have that burning desire. But yeah, I mean, obviously I still work through that, and you don't want to change your routine in those circumstances. But I think something like I have become, I look back maybe 10 years ago and what you're talking about, I could have cared less, you know, like, but now I feel like as I'm growing in the spiritual life, I'm much more aware of these little things like sins, attachments, inclinations, things like that, that I didn't really even ponder.
It can almost be discouraging because mm-hmm. it's like playing whack-a-mole, right? Yeah. You know, you got one vice down. Oh, shoot. Right. It pops up three more.
Yeah.
And it's not that they popped up. It's just that you never noticed you had them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've heard that as you grow in the spiritual life, you almost realize how far you feel further away because you're more aware. You have this clarity of mind to see the ways that you're falling short. But I think that's a good thing. You know, obviously
yeah.
you don't want to stay there, right? And it may be a lifetime struggle, but if you're part of growing is that examination of conscience, of knowing where your weaknesses are, such that maybe that's something that, you know, like that you really try to work on and be intentional about. Because I think, you know, to your point about scrolling on the phone, something you can change.
that's not a huge ask that God is asking to give that up.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are other ones that are bigger.
Right.
But
it starts with awareness.
That's true. That's true. Analogy I once heard is, you know, if you look at a window at night, you don't notice anything. But once the sun comes up, the sun shines through it and you see all the little specks and dirt. And you're like, ooh, you know, it hasn't changed in its dirtiness. It's just now you see the light, how it's not shining through.
Right.
So I remember one time I was talking with one of our youth group kids, and we were just joking around and just talking about holiness, but in a very lighthearted kind of way. And I said to him, so do you think I'm holy? And he kind of paused and he said, you're not as holy as you should be. And I was like, ouch, but true, but yeah. True. Like what's, I mean, and at the same time, I was kind of wrestling with that. Like, first of all, what does holiness look like? And what's holding us back? Like, what's holding you back, personally?
The world.
Really?
Yeah. Worldliness. There's so many. Scrolling social media, for instance.
Are you a social media?
Shows. I have Instagram.
Do you spend time on
it? Really only at night before bed, because it's how I connect to the world. Like, what happened today?
Yeah.
Or what are my family and friends posting? And I know that's not a good time, because then maybe my prayer time gets shorter. Or if I haven't done my prayer time yet that day, I shouldn't be doing that. But I don't want to be alone and just in prayer, right? I'm lacking there.
Mm.
I'd rather just scroll, see what's going on, see what people are posting about whatever's coming up, and then just fall right asleep.
So what you're saying is kind of distractions, worldly distractions?
Well, anything of the world, right, prevents you from growing in holiness. So that could be... you know, desire to make a lot of money.
Well, I would say anything that we use wrongly from the world.
Right? I guess there's desiring
everything in the world should lead us to God if it's used rightly.
Yeah, I mean, it's the right ordering of goods and priorities.
And there's desiring heaven, right?
Yeah.
Living that out, accepting God's will. Mm-hmm. And there's desiring the world. The world is fame, wealth, status, materialism,
yeah.
Comparing yourself to others, you know, things that don't lead you to holiness.
Sure. Pleasure.
Partying too much, drinking, you know, socialization, good. If you aren't doing your prayer time, bad. Right? It's out of order.
Right. Balance.
Exactly.
That's true. That can definitely hold us back. It's certainly held me back.
So Winter League for Ultimate is a lot of fun. It's the season, you know, currently going. I didn't sign up.
What?
It was very hard for me.
Oh my gosh.
Very hard. I love it. It's a sport. I'm good at it. You know, like so many friends are there. But I have too many things going on right now.
Mm.
I can't do it. It's not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we start at 9 o'clock at night.
Oh my gosh.
You know, it goes, or maybe it's 8:30 to 10. And then everyone socializes. So I'll at least get stuck another hour. It's just impossible. Like just talking to people that you know.
Yeah.
And I never would leave that early. I would always stay because you just keep talking to more people and I'm a social person.
Sure.
And I enjoy that time. And then it takes another hour to wind down, right? You have to shower as well. So I don't go to bed till, you know, 1 or later
Oh my
on
gosh.
A Thursday night every week, all winter long, like starting in October through March. And I used to work jobs that started at 9. Now I work one that starts at 7:30. Oh. It's just not. And that was hard. And also the league has just gone in a direction of, you know, trans inclusiveness.
Oh, really?
Yes. So basically anyone can say, I want to, you know, play as a woman, even if I'm a man.
Mm.
And that's a league rule. And they don't even say men and women anymore. They've come up with these terms, defenders of men and defenders of women. Doms and DAOs, and they say it. We need a DAO. So they're saying we need a woman or a lady.
Really?
So there's that whole part of it too, which I don't subscribe to.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Much as, you know, I do want to be inclusive and loving to people who are living this and going through it, but...
Yeah, but to ask you to change is...
it's, you know, when evil disguises itself as good, right? Like these people need help.
Mm-hmm.
That's not changing their gender. So... Anyway, that was hard for me to give it up, but I did.
Wow. And have you seen benefits in your own life?
Well, I mean, basically every week I'm just exhausted by the time Thursday night comes.
So
it just would be impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, or I could do it, or I'm then so dead Friday, or I lose my Saturday. So what am I? I'm not going to have my prayer time. I'm not going to, you know, keep my obligations, right? Like things I'm supposed to be doing. And it's just a sport for fun with friends, right? Like it is ultimately a worldly thing. You know, my holiness there would be, how do I interact with people?
Yeah.
Right? But I'm a super competitive person and I want to win. So then there's this other side of me that comes out.
So you may not be the best example of a Christian out there on the court.
Exactly. Yeah, I may not. So anyway, that was one. I mean, I don't have a TV. That really wasn't that hard for me.
Mm.
There's not one in my apartment. That's not something I miss. I used to watch TV here and there. I used to be somewhat tuned in to series. Now I'm not at all.
Yeah.
I don't really watch movies. I mean, it's very rare. If somebody would really want to watch something, then maybe. Mm-hmm. But I'm just totally disconnected now, and I don't miss it. I don't care. Like, these are changes I've made to become holier, right? Because I'm giving my time in other ways. I volunteer a lot and support my parish and the youth and the young adult community, but I also need to do my prayer time.
Yes. That's critical. That's really critical, the prayer time piece. And I was thinking, as you're talking about sports, I'll tell you, as a pastor, my number one fight is against kids' sports. And I'm not against kids playing sports. I played baseball all throughout high school and college, but it's become the god that has taken people away from even just Sunday mass, right?
It's disordered.
It's disordered, right. So it's good, but it can be very misused. As any good thing can be.
And what are they striving for? Worldliness. My kid's going to get a scholarship and become pro. Most likely not.
Probably not.
1% of kids. Super amazing. Pretty much.
Yeah.
It's very low. And yet, it's just a culture. It's another, it's a strong force in the culture right now. Kids used to play multiple sports. Now there's so much emphasis on one sport. Dedicate yourself to that, you know, all year. Special coaches. What are we doing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's got to be bad for the kid.
It's terribly bad, but I think there's a deep yearning in the heart for the competition, because it's like the most epic thing that people will ever enjoy, because they have never heard or experienced or think that the gospel can be epic.
They're missing out.
They're totally missing out, because they don't realize that we live in the midst of a very epic battle between good and evil. Right. And that battleground is our soul. Exactly. And we have an incredible opportunity to fight on the side of the King of Kings and to have him win the victory in us and to be conformed to him, to fight the daily fight against our lower nature. Like, that's epic, because there's something literally eternal hanging in the balance here. And that's way better than the sports score, which no one is going to remember in a year.
Exactly.
So why is it then, it's one of the points I want to bring up is, like, why is it that so many Catholics are very happy being mediocre? Because there's an awful lot of Catholics who even attend Mass every Sunday, but don't actually have an active spiritual prayer life. And maybe they've heard the gospel, maybe they've heard, like, the best preaching of the gospel. And sometimes I just still see, you know, even among my own parishioners, just kind of this, like, oh, that's nice that you gave that homily, but, it's, you know, I'm not going to change my life. I'm not going to do anything, you know. And especially when I invite them, hey, let's come to Bible study. Why don't you go to this? Too busy. You can't do it. You know, so it's just kind of like, why is mediocrity so common within the Catholic Church?
Well, I think people often don't remember the fact that we're pilgrims on this earth and that our home is in heaven. So there's just, minds are not oriented to the eternal and they're bogged down by the temporal. But also Christianity, and I mean, it involves the cross. It involves dying to self. In baptism, like we're baptized into Christ's death, and the resurrection only comes through the cross. And we have to share in that. So that means that all of the, you know, we basically have to die a daily death to ourselves. And that's hard.
Yeah, it is.
Sacrifice is really hard.
True. I think, too, like a lot of Catholics attend Mass out of obligation. Mm-hmm. Because there is a Sunday obligation. And so if you're just doing an obligation, you don't want to go more than what the obligation requires.
Right. Yeah. And I find that people don't really know the story of salvation. You know, there's this rampant thought nowadays that everyone's okay. There's no such thing as sin. So if you have that sort of concept in your mind, why is there a need for a savior? Why is there a need for any of this? They don't see the importance, the gravity of the fall and concupiscence.
Yeah.
And what's on the line, what's at stake, that there's a spiritual battle going on, that your soul, your eternal sort of what's going to happen to you for eternity is based on how you approach life here.
That's funny. I just recently put out a bulletin article about that used the analogy of heated seats in a car. Because my car doesn't have it, but you can actually add heated seats for like $500. Mm-hmm. And I actually don't like heated seats. They make me feel really weird. I don't know. I'm not a fan. But if you want heated seats, you know, $500. But that's kind of like a high cost, right? So you'd have to say, well, is having my bum warm worth $500? Well, maybe yes, maybe no. But then if my mechanic was to say, you know, your engine will not work anymore unless you make this $1,000 repair, I would easily just throw down $1,000 and say, all right, yeah, make the repair, because the engine is critical, unlike the heated seats, which are not critical. So you're willing to pay a high cost if you see a high value in it. Mm-hmm. And so I think if unless you preach about ultimately salvation from sin and everlasting life, that's the only thing that Christ offers us that we can't get from the world. Because mm-hmm. like Christ offers us a lot of other things. He offers us, you know, peace. Well, okay, but you know, if I can make my life work pretty well without Christ. Christ offers us a moral code. Well, yeah, so does the world. You know, I can have a good moral code. You know, so there's a lot of other things that have a lot less cost, except for the one thing, which is everlasting life, that we can't get from the world. I don't know. I was just thinking of that.
No, it's spot on, but people just aren't there. They're not thinking about heaven. As Diane was saying, they're living, you know, in the present moment. And what's more important to them is the things that are coming up in their life, right? You know, my son's getting married. My other son's going through this in college. I'm looking to get a promotion at work. Like, you know what I mean? People are very stuck in the world.
Yeah.
And they aren't seeing beyond to heaven.
Well, the gospel is very countercultural. It's very radical. So to spur oneself onto holiness, to truly do it, is means that you have to go against the tide.
And you definitely, you have to reorient your mind, because the world says freedom comes through doing whatever you want, freedom and happiness, right? But the gospel, freedom and true happiness, true joy comes through that dying to self. But if you're never willing to do that, and you're never willing to undergo sort of the hardship of what that entails, and it's a chiseling away, so it's meant to hurt, right? But ultimately that does bring the freedom and the happiness and the joy, the lasting freedom, happiness, and joy that Christ wants. And people just get so distracted. I mean, to Lauren's point, even the goods of the world, right? So marriage, kids have been distorted. People don't see vocation as a means of attaining to sainthood or to heaven. They see it as, all right, this is just something.
A box to check, because that's what you're supposed to do.
Or he'll make me happy. Mm-hmm. Or even worse, he completes me.
yeah, no, only God completes you.
I think, as far as, you know, I'm just thinking about the parishioner thing, like a middle-aged person who's kind of ho-hum. That's why I did an example of, you know, what's going on in your children's lives. But I think the devil is also at work there. You know, I mean, he's telling people or influencing them, oh, what you're doing is enough. Mm. I'm fulfilling my obligation. I go to Mass on Sunday. Maybe I do confession once a year.
If that.
And that's the church requirement. You know, I'm doing enough. And like the devil can keep you there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then again, you're more focused on the world because that's normal. Like we live in the world. That's kind of, I think, what comes first. And to
heaven
comes second. You have to be taught that or shown that.
Right. I mean, even though we have the desire in our hearts, we're living for something we haven't seen. If we caught one glimpse of heaven, this world would lose all of its interest to us. Mm-hmm. All of its interest. And that's a hard thing. So what can you say then to someone that is living that kind of middle class, pretty decently happy, bare bones Catholicism to stir them onto holiness? What can you say to them? I need help because I need to preach to my
hard.
People.
I think that's really hard. I think, you know, we always say we're supposed to be the example, right? You know, how you live your life hopefully inspires others. And the closer we get to Christ, the more that he lives in us, the more he shines through us, right? So people get that sense of Christ through us. And I've heard, you know, it's Jesus in you that will make someone vulnerable and open up, and or Jesus in you that will give them the sense of peace. You know, it's not you, it's him in you. So when you do that, people can sense it, feel it, and they're drawn to you. And maybe that can start to convert their heart. I don't think anything that we say really can do much. I mean, I guess it depends. You could have a conversation that stirs someone into something, but I think it's more about your presence, how you live.
Mm.
And I'm just thinking too, maybe obviously this presupposes a faith in Christ, but if Christ is who he says he is, then everything has to change. He's either, what he says is true, or it's not.
Right.
And if it's true, then you have to take him at his word, everything, mm-hmm. not picking and choosing, everything. And his message is consistently dying to self, you know? Yeah, I mean, that should, if your heart is really open to it, it's is this true? And if it is, then my life has to totally change. My life has to be totally given to him.
Yeah. But, you know, it's Jesus himself seems to really not like mediocrity. I mean, I love that great line from the book of Revelation where he says, he will vomit you out of his mouth if you're neither hot nor cold. And you're like, ooh, wow. And it's often been said, I don't know if it has a specific quote that somebody said it originally, but that it's easier to convert a hardened sinner than a lukewarm Catholic. Mm. I mean, I don't know. What do you make of that? Like, why does Jesus so dislike mediocrity? And I don't know.
I think it's pride, right? Which is the greatest sin.
Mm.
They're just content where they are. And so they're not seeking more. You know, someone, I guess, who's farther away probably has some kind of trauma or something. There's something broken. So they probably are seeking more or peace or something, love, but they don't know how.
Mm.
But then once it happens, there's just a very quick, you know, very strong conversion, and then everything is changed.
Yeah.
Well, and also when you sin, you recognize your weakness and your dependency on God, you know, and you have this increased gratitude, I think, for the mercy that is shown to you, right? Because someone in the world would probably just shun you, or there would be sort of, you know, obviously there's consequences to actions, but Christ like takes us if we're truly repentant and we confess our sins, right? As opposed to someone who is lukewarm, who maybe goes around kind of pridefully and doesn't realize that everything, that your life is a gift, that you're a steward of all these things, right? You can just walk around like you're your own God,
yeah,
without any sort of thought for how everything in your life is, you know, God holds you in existence and he could take you out of existence in a heartbeat.
I once had a friend say to me, you know, you're never going to find happiness here on this earth. And they're saying that to me specifically, like I would never be satisfied. And I've always thought that was very true. Like I've always had a restlessness in me. Like there's gotta be something more out there than this, what meets the eye. Even from the time I was like a little kid, like I was like, there's gotta be more to this life than all of that. I remember one time I was probably in like seventh or eighth grade. I was homeschooled, but I used to go to a Catholic school before that. And my mom was like, all right, you need to go to their Catholic school dance. And I was like, I really don't want to do this. I'm like, this is awful. So I was forced to go to an awkward middle school dance and with people that I really wasn't friends with anymore. And it was like, it was so bad, so bad. And I came home and I was like, that was miserable. And I was like, Mom, why did you make me go? And she said, because you just have to see what the world is all about. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying to her, Mom, I've seen the world and I don't want it. And she was like reduced to silence. So I was like, I don't know. But like, how do you, like, it's so hard because I think God has to place that restlessness in your heart. God has to place that desire for heaven in your heart. It's something like, it's his grace that works on us. It's not something that we could say or do, you know, because 1,000 people may walk past Mother Teresa and be amazed at her, but not change their life. And it's somebody that walks past and is like, wait a second, I need to change. Or, you know, 1,000 people hear the same sermon and somebody's motivated and others are not. So at the end, I think it is grace.
But that restlessness in and of itself is a grace. It just proves that there is a God and that we're pilgrims on this earth. We're made for another world. Yeah. I think it's really hard, though, now to recognize that, because I've been thinking about just coworkers and friends who aren't practicing and stuff. And they feel that restlessness, but then there's all these other distractions of, okay, well, maybe it's because of this thing that I was doing that's causing me restlessness. So I'm going to go on to another thing. And if that doesn't satisfy, which it won't,
right,
they'll go on to another thing and right, another thing and another thing.
You have to have a guide to tell you what this restlessness is all about.
Yeah, because you could get to the end of your life and you're still jumping from one thing to another without sort of that eternal sort of framework mindset.
Yeah. This past year, there was one of my confirmation kids, a 13-year-old, who wanted to come and see me. And so his mom and he came in, and this poor kid was like in tears, and it was like, he was like going through such anxieties. Like, I don't know why, but all of a sudden, like for the last like 3 weeks, I've been so afraid of death. And so we start talking about it, and he's like, he's so afraid of like losing his mom. And like, he even asked me, like, is my stuffed animal going to go to heaven? It's like, that's really cute. But, but thankfully I was actually so grateful to see this, because I was able to sit with him and say, look, the reason why like God is allowing this right now is because you have an openness to really pursue heaven, because like, this is what God wants for you. He wants you to pursue heaven, and you're seeing that everything in this world is transitory. This is a great grace, and you're able to see it at 13. That's a huge grace. Like direct that to heaven. And he started to do that. You could see him like getting more into his faith and being more checked in personally. But it's that grace that he received, a hard grace, a difficult grace of like anxiety over death, that allowed him to start pursuing holiness.
And that's why we should pray for an increase in the gift of wisdom, to have to view all of the events of our life in sort of the context of eternity, so that we really know what's important and what's not. Yeah. What can I let go and what can I sacrifice here? How can I do things with increased charity, you know, as opposed to, yeah.
So let's say somebody wants to grow in holiness but doesn't have time to do more churchy things. What can they do?
Cut out some of the worldliness.
Yeah, there's no excuse. You have
stop
to
binge watching
time.
TV shows.
That's fair.
Get off your video games. Like, honestly, we choose so many things that are just detractors.
But what about like a mother of like, you know, four kids? You know, like, she's got to take her kids to all sorts of different things, and
right,
like my sister. Yeah. You know, she's giving her birth to her fourth in August, God willing. You know. And she's got three kids and her 6 years old at home. Mm-hmm. Like, she doesn't have a moment to pray. She can't go to church and volunteer.
But God is not demanding that of her. It's you become sanctified through your vocation, through giving of yourself to your husband, to your kids, educating them. I mean, it's very easy too to make a morning offering so that every moment, every ordinary mundane moment of your day is used for whatever intention that you have, you know? So I always make a morning offering, and I offer it for the salvation of my soul, my family's soul, my future husband, future children, and for the release of souls in purgatory, for specific, you know, if someone's struggling in my life that I know, or someone has a prayer request or intention, then your entire day is meaningful.
So it's really just being intentional.
Yeah.
Rather than like actually trying to increase the time you spend doing churchy things. I think there's like, you know, I love John Bosco, and he had, you know, 400 boys they had to take care of. So he used to say that he prayed in scraps of time, mm-hmm. 2 minutes here, 3 minutes there, 5 minutes there. You know, I don't think he ever sat down and did like a contemplative holy hour, but it was all he could do. But you're right, Diane, it was all for Christ, mm-hmm. his whole life, his whole vocation.
And there's so many short prayers, like my Lord and my all, you know, you could just, when you go up and heat up your coffee or you're microwaving your food for lunch, you can sort of bring to mind these prayers, these short petitions that are very meditative that you can, you know, incorporate throughout your day.
That's certainly true.
I think, you know, in the case of your sister, just her role as a mother is sanctifying in and of itself. Right? I mean, especially with small children, that's very demanding, a lot of time, a lot of patience. So God uses everything to sanctify us, right? Especially the people in our lives. So that's a phase of life that's dedicated, you know, in that role. There's not time, let's say, to give to the church, but there are so many ways to grow in holiness. Live your vocation.
Yeah, God puts all of the sacrifices you need to do just right in front of you. Sometimes the people.
God, yeah. I really don't want to do this. That's when you know, that's what you should be doing.
That's right.
To make yourself holier.
That's right. Yeah, amen to that. We should spur ourselves on daily to make progress, because we're not going to be saints overnight, but if day by day we grow in some virtue, then we can say it's been a successful day. And if we've offered our day to God, then nothing has been wasted. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Restless. You can find us on 1350 AM or 103.9 FM on the Veritas Catholic Network app, which you should all download, and also other places where you get podcasts. So tune in next time. God bless you.